You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined by the full crew this week, Nicole Hale, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Welcome, team.
Hello.
Hello.
So, it is Fanboy Versus Hardcore, as we talk about some of the full-on nasty that made its way into comics this week, in particular in the New 52. So, we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. If you hadn't heard about it, apparently, Triplett had not, so...
This is an education for him.
So,
I know some books I'm not buying now. Yeah.
And our work here is done. See you next week.
Yes. All right. Goodbye. Thank you. Anyway, there's not much other news. Is there any other news in comics that we want to talk about other than this thing?
Not that I know of. Well, I believe we're just going to confirm this week that DC Universe Online is going free to play next month.
Yeah, that is a cool little bit. Now, it's free-ish. I mean, yes, you don't have to pay, but you get seriously reduced benefits for doing so. You only get a limited number of character slots. You can't trade money or items to other characters. So there's a lot of little things that...
So is it reduced in a way no one's going to want to play it?
No, not at all. I mean, you can pay the regular full $15 a month and get the full benefits and everything. You can pay less than that and get sort of a mid-range. So what they've added is like a tier membership. So as far as gameplay, you in your character playing through the world, that's no different. What's different is how much stuff you can have, how many different characters you can have, how you can send and receive stuff, things like that. And those are actually, that's why I say it's free-ish, because those are actually a big thing in terms of, you know, playing an MMO. You typically have multiple characters and you typically want to trade items between those characters. So not being able to do that, I think, is going to be a strong limitation. I think you'll see people with maybe lower tier paid versions, but so that's interesting. Also, new episodes of Young Justice as well.
That's right. That did happen. That was a thing.
that did happen.
Man, I don't know. That got pretty hot and heavy as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
I was pretty shocked by that myself.
That was like the longest, moistest kiss I've ever seen.
I know. It was like, wow, they're not. That's wow, a lot of dude. Pent up, you know.
See, what I actually read was that they did something pretty unprecedented. They actually got the two voice actors in the booth at the same time to make out.
Nice.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Now, did they pay extra for that, or is that just like a little bit of a, you know?
Yeah. Chris Triplett, reset your camera, please. But in terms of episodes, I mean, they're saying this is into the second season, but I think it's really just the second half of the first.
It's not even the second half yet. It's episode 11. You're not even halfway in. A 7-month break. I'm actually going to have to go back and watch the other episodes to remind myself. Because I was looking at all the guys in the prison, and I was like, I bet all these characters appeared before, and I just don't remember.
I don't think so. I don't think all of them. I've rewatched a lot of episodes and don't remember a lot of them being there. I mean, certainly not Riddler. Edward Nigma wasn't.
Riddler wasn't in it.
I thought it was interesting, though, because it has sort of implied... I mean, we know that there's this larger thing going on, but...
Light.
The light, or whatever that is. But thought it was interesting because they almost sort of started to explain. You felt like you were getting an explanation for why all the cold-based villains attacked at the same time. And then they didn't really give you the full explanation. Like, this, the tidbit of the explanation just asked more questions. So it was like, well, damn it.
I'm just glad they went back to that because, you know, that was just weird.
Oh, I think everybody saw that, you know, as something to come back to. I mean, if there's one thing I can gripe about Young Justice, aside from Hello Megan and Robin's weird little wordplay, it is the way that they're really, really pushing this core plot. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever really feels resolved when you get to the end of an episode because they're really, really all about this conspiracy. And, you know, it's something I've been arguing recently with Thundercats or the complete end of the spectrum, Transformers Prime, where there's basically no through line. And it's like, it, you know, when it comes to Thundercats, I'm genuinely depressed at how many people seem to be willing to forego real characterization of its cast in favor of epic plot constantly. Because that's what Thundercats has suffered from that to no end. Mm-hmm. And Young Justice is almost finding the balance, but I really feel the individual... I mean, it's a brilliantly characterized show because it's a Greg Weisman show. You expect nothing less from him. But the individual plots of the episodes, I think, have really suffered because you never feel like they're fully resolved.
Yeah, I mean, it's had a lot of... there's been a lot of carryover, and you get to the end, and it's still like, well, then why did... and so it's, you're just constantly, I mean, especially this episode where it's like, all right, we're going to do the cold resolution. And it's like, even at the end, they're kind of like, oh, well, you're like, so, okay, was the plan to put Strange in place? Was it to let Edward Nigma escape? Like
was it to get rid of the wall in some way? Because they got rid of Amanda Waller too.
Yeah, I mean,
well, it seemed like the primary object. Well, no, because it seemed like putting Strange in charge was the primary objective, based on the discussion they had later, and that actually breaking everybody out would have been a nice bonus.
Yeah, because certainly
I wouldn't mind an episode going by where they didn't all go, oh, the light, you say, oh, the light.
Well, at least they're not, like, showing them now. I mean, they're just kind of mentioning it, and they're not, like, doing the whole, you know, person that failed being interrogated in front of the light.
Yeah, that's getting old. And, you know, it's, like, really obvious who some of the light are, as well, like, but I don't know what's going on with the, you know, Queen Bee is blatantly, obviously, one of them, and I fully expect some other major characters like Lex Luthor or Deathstroke or Ra's al Ghul to be members of it.
Yeah. If they're following anything with, like, comics, you would think Lex Luthor because, you know, Superboy's on the theme, you know? The whole connection. Yeah. There.
No, Ocean Master. I bet Ocean Master's on them as well.
Nice. So, but we'll see. Yeah. But I'm glad it's back, and I'm having fun watching it. So, I mean,
it's a good show. I don't feel fully fulfilled when I get to the end of an episode. It's like last episode before it went off the air. It was like, here's a big metal ball that's falling out of the sky. What is it? We're not going to bring it up again. You know, two full episodes. It's rolling around there, but they're not. It's like a piece of furniture or something. You obviously came from Apocalypse. So that was a boom tube. We're not going to mention that.
So there's another thing that happened.
I still need to watch it.
Yeah, I mean,
once I look forward to watching because it bored me most of the time.
And it's been nice because Thundercats hasn't been on, right? So.
I think it's in repeats now.
Yeah. So, anyway,
I just can't stand Megan. She's done nothing.
I do gotta say that character does
like Man Hunters. Miss Martian. I like.
Yeah,
her.
I mean, well, I think no. She bugged me out of the gate, and Hello, Megan is still stupid. Like, I mean, they've progressively explained that she is the way she is because her entire understanding of the way life on Earth works has been derived from watching broadcasts of sitcoms on Mars. So that is why the way she acts, she's stolen the Hello Megan catchphrase from a TV program. We've seen that. But it doesn't make her not annoying.
Right. I mean, it could be worse. It could be Miko. But
it could be a lot worse, trust me.
But
I don't like Miko that
much. Now, in the comics, is Megan a white Martian?
She's white Martian.
I'm assuming they're building to that surprise revelation.
She was. Well,
it.
I don't know, because does she know that? I mean, did she not know that in the comics for a while then?
She knew it in the comics.
Because in the show, she said that she's a Green Martian.
I'm pretty sure in the comics...
She would say that, wouldn't she?
Well, yeah. I mean, she made it. She said a really passing statement about it. I mean, it seemed really like she wouldn't have.
Yeah, but she also made a point of drawing attention to the White and Green Civil War whenever they were talking about war in school in that episode.
Maybe when she says I'm a Green Martian, she's like more like I'm a Green Martian in ideal. You know?
Yeah. It's
like,
and maybe that's
White
where...
Martians were murdering bastards. I'd rather be a Green Martian. I'm a Green Martian.
I'm a Green Martian.
Yeah, it's probably something like that. Yeah.
It could be. That would be interesting.
I'm fully expecting them to build to that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I figure that's coming.
As the series goes on.
So
that might have made something interesting. I'm sorry, that show's just boring me.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, I imagine you'd be far less bored if you felt you were getting any kind of satisfactory resolution to what you were seeing.
Right, to the end.
But it's like, every episode is like, keep watching, kids.
Yeah.
And it's like,
watching Heroes.
At what point do you go... I don't want to watch anymore whenever, you know. I mean, it's not like I'm speaking out against story arcs here or anything. It's just there's a better way to do them than leave every episode unresolved.
Right.
Yeah. That's why you watch Ponies.
No.
You learn a lesson. You learn a lesson every week.
Well, that's fantastic. Other things I'll just run through mention real quick. There's a couple of background images of Dark Knight. Catwoman stuff. Go check that out.
Yep, she pretty much looks exactly like Catwoman.
Speaking of Catwoman, though. So.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's have a talk, kids. Let's have a discussion, if we shall.
Just let's sit down on the couch here.
Just before you start, just tell me, were there two versions of the comic? Was there a.
Oh,
this
no.
This is the adult version, and this is
the
ages version. You know?
Okay. So
hang on.
So here's the deal. Unless you live under a rock like Triplett.
Which I do.
So this past week, several comics came out. We're not actually reviewing, I don't think, either of these comics. This will probably be the extent that we'll talk about them this week. Two particular comics caught the interest of a lot of readers, in particular female readers, but I think male readers alike that have a sense of decency. The two issues in discussion here would be Red Hood and the Outlaws and Catwoman. Now, they both sort of do similar things, but in different ways, I guess. The issue here is basically how strong women are portrayed in comics.
By men.
Now, to be fair, and we'll talk about this in terms of art, because there's two issues here. There's the story and the art. They're two separate issues, I think. Not separate issues, but partially not conjoined issues that are going on. So the problem out of Red Hood, which is pretty straightforward and simple, Starfarer's character has been changed a bit, I guess we could say.
A bit.
And it's not that doesn't happen to characters. You know, they sort of evolve. Starfire's always been provocative in some ways.
Always.
You know.
She was designed that way. Yeah. You know, I'm not complaining about that. As a gentleman, I have no objection to a sexy lady in a comic book.
No.
Let me just draw that line right now before anything else is said.
No.
You know,
and that's
I
not
like
the issue.
Your man. I like Kenneth Rocafort's art from Red Hood. I like Gillian March on Catwoman. I like their art. I like a lady.
Right. But you basically, Starfire, I mean, in terms of what you would talk about as far as like a strong character, a character trying, you know, a female character, being a strong, forceful character, or a force, if you will. She's basically not that so much as just a sex doll. I don't know how to put that really any other way.
Starfire's thing back in the day under Wolfman and Perez, the idea of Starfire, she came from a planet where emotion was prized. Love was the guiding emotion of her planet. You love many people, always emotionally, sometimes physically. Something she said once, you know, but that, you know, that's the height of it, you know, but she came to Earth, she fell in love with Dick Grayson, and she had to re-examine the way that worked. But that's always been a part of, like, Tamaranian culture, and it's why she dresses the way she does. Yeah, you know, so, you know, like, it's not, you know, so in this issue, Starfire bones Roy Harper. And, you know, it's not that specifically that I think anyone really takes issue with. But it's the way that it's done.
Right. Because it's basically made the point of, oh no, I just want to have sex and no emotion, no need for like attachment.
They've said that her Tamaranian physiology, apparently, out of the blue, has been relaunched so that she now only recognizes humans as sights and smells, can't really distinguish one from the other, doesn't remember her time with the Titans, which is our second indication, by the way, aside from Batwoman last week, that the new Teen Titans, that Garth and Beast Boy and Raven and Starfire and Cyborg and Robin were the Titans together, that still exists in the rebooted continuity. We'll see what Teen Titans next week has to say about that. Anyway, she doesn't remember that. They just wiped her mind. They have wiped her mind, wiped any emotional attachment she has to any characters, relationship with Robin, gone. Mm-hmm. And now she just wants to wander around having meaningless sex. Roy asks her, what do I have to know? Is there anything special I should know about making love to a Tamaranian? And she replies, only that love has nothing to do with it. Which is the literal polar opposite of what that should actually be.
Right. Of where that character had been. So,
I mean, this is a relaunch, you know. You can say this is relaunched Starfire, whatever. But it's not, you know. It'd be one thing if they'd taken it and said, oh, Starfire has not always been this way, but they're not saying that. They're saying she used to be like this, and now we have arbitrarily decided to change her into this, like, in context, in the course of continuity. Something has happened to her that has changed her from being this to that in one stream of time. It is not a clean reboot for the character. They're saying this happened, and now she's different.
Yeah. And then on top of that, there's the art, which is just, I mean...
I like Kenneth Rocafort's art. You know, the specific reason I picked this up to flip through it is because I like his art. I don't know, he draws a sexy lady. So I was looking for... I picked it up, I wanted to take a look at it.
But some of it is not... Some of it's just the ridiculous posing and nature of it. And that's
there's
the part.
Not all that much, though. As far as, you know, I mean, there's the... She comes out of the sea, she flicks her hair, and she picks up a towel. You know, to be fair, those are the only instances of any provocative posing.
Okay.
I didn't read it, but when I saw the backup in the other DC number ones this week, I was kind of thinking it was going to be like a James Bond type of a moment, you know? That's what I was expecting, but I didn't read it.
The only other thing of note is that it was pointed out as well that I guess the original version of this bikini thing, if you want to call it that, was transparent. At some point, it was going to be transparent. Someone at DC had the decency to.
I mean, apparently, this whole thing was Bleeding Cool posted some anonymous inside, awesome inside sources, anonymous sources from DC just talking about the discussion among various staffers that went into how to stage the scene. I mean, because what we have to point out here is that Starfire's attitude is presented in this as she's able to do this and allowed to do this because she's a strong, independent woman that don't need no man. but wouldn't mind one.
Right. Doesn't mind having them for the moments, but, yeah. You know.
And that is the... You know, that is the crux of what is really wrong with this, because it is blatant titillation fabricated by a male writer. You know, it's like this masquerading as empowerment, as if this is empowering someone.
Yeah, like this is empowering.
Because this is the only idea that a male writer can conceive of for how to write a strong, independent woman.
Right.
Equals four.
Right. Male fantasy for what a woman
Am I incorrect in thinking, okay, now Marv Wolfman is a man, right? Wolfman did write Starfire, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the indication here is not that men...
Titans Games by Marv Wolfman and Perez just came out this week, finally, 20 years later. I haven't read it yet myself, but you can read about a not whorish, non-mind-wiped Starfire this week, exactly the same week that they brought out this Hages new version.
That's
talk about
crazy.
The parallel. Isn't it?
I mean, this is not... I mean... I don't know what's supposed to be appealing about that. I mean, from an empowerment standpoint, from even... I mean, even, like I said, I didn't read the full issue, but there's nothing about that particular sequence that made me, you know, go, oh, well, that's an interesting character. Like, I can read about...
No, I mean, I have no objection to the actual sexual content. I mean, we'll get on to Catwoman in a minute, but I'm going to preface it by saying this. I have no objection to the sexual content. There's been sex in comics for decades now, you know, once they started getting subversive in the 70s and trying to slip in off-panel references to it. And certainly everything happens off-panel in this. I've got no issue with the actual portrayal of the sexual act here. Just so we're clear, you know, I'm not prude or anything. Solely like the utter desecration of Starfire's character, the giant stinking dump that they took on the character, although frankly this version of the character seems like she might enjoy that, but
I mean, it's just, well, because it's just as, I mean, it is, it's a porno, I mean, it's a porno type character, I mean, it's yes, exactly, yeah, kind of, you know, like fan, you know, just kind of fan fiction nonsense, you know, that would come out of some fantasy, you know, for this character.
This is not like, would you say this is not what today's audience would expect from a Starfire? Because isn't that like the whole point of the reboot? Because it's...
Does this mean a reboot and you were going to put Starfire at the fore of one of your relaunched comics that lots of new readers would be checking out, maybe draw some inspiration from the Teen Titans cartoon. You know, the whole reason that the mainstream world has any idea who Starfire is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, Nicole? I mean, is this, you know...
It's something that you just got to get used to. It's not like this is the first time this has happened.
That's one of the most blatant to transform a character so completely. I know, but again, it's also
a relaunch. I mean, well, it's
I don't buy this relaunch excuse.
Yeah, no. This is,
you know, this
more
was
things
way...
change, more things stay the same, well, and this would just
the thing
didn't
is,
stay...
this is their way to say, hey, we want to change this character. Why not do it with the reboot?
Okay, but that's not what
it's,
it.
It's all. Well, the thing question is, it's all about business, you know.
Okay, but the question is how. Okay, as a female reader,
but this, how is this gonna, like?
I mean, is this a character that you're looking up to at this point? I mean, this is this a character that you can say represents female empowerment?
Not really. Not with this issue. I didn't even get to read this issue. I read Catwoman, and you know, it's just something I've gotten used to with comics. But again,
well, maybe that's even worse then. I mean,
know,
in a way,
isn't it? Yeah.
I think that's worse, especially when DC is saying.
I think
saying
I was
that...
used to it in comics in the 90s, but I mean, comics.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
They've
thing,
kind of
you know.
Up some
it's like,
then.
Yeah, who's this supposed to be for? All the 20 somethings that are actually reading comics. Yeah, I'm pretty sure if they want to see some titties, they could just go onto the internet.
Yeah, it's called the internet, kids. Who
is this for? That is the question, and it's the same question as applies to
the
Catwoman.
The thing,
you know,
like,
this is like immature. There's nothing. First of all, there's nothing mature about it. You know, it's the most immature definition of maturity.
Right.
It's 13-year-old boy maturity who keeps hidden under his bed. It's like, and they're not reading comics.
No.
You know.
No.
What, you know? It's just. Yeah.
It just seems like it's like a dream world where, okay, you had this one character that you knew for so many years, and it's just like, okay, well, we're just going to put this whole different character, but give her the same name. And
well, okay, but that's the
coming for me. I think it's disrespectful because I really like Teen Titans, and when I found out about
this, I did too.
I was floored. I mean,
what self-respecting. Even guy, I mean, you know, like, if you want to be completely sexist about it, because to say, I mean, because there's a double sexuality here. There's a double sexist idea that's being put forward here. Not only is it saying that the only way that women can be empowered is sexually, to present themselves in a strong sexualized way, but it's also basically trying to flip the stereotypical male equivalent, which is that guys would have sex with whoever when, you know, given the opportunity, guys would have sex with whoever whenever, and it's essentially
that's
flipping
true,
the script
true.
On that, and I'm kind of offended at both points. I don't, you know, I think that I
well
think that,
I'm not offended because that's true.
Well, I think it's less true than it really is or that the concept is, but I would hope it is anyway. But I think both things are not desirable. Both things are not realistic, and I don't think it does service to reality. You know, not to say that comics are about reality, but in a sort of fantasy world, like, this is not interesting. You know, this is not.
After 3 weeks where we've progressively seen DC seem to put an emphasis on creating more relatable human heroes in the Marvel vein.
Mm-hmm.
This is just
cardboard cutouts of things. So,
and speaking of things that are even less relatable.
Yeah. So, this Catwoman thing.
Just to move things along.
Okay, I did read Catwoman because I have more of a say in this one. So.
Okay. I didn't read either, so I'm basically just going on things. There's a great article, I'll go ahead and mention it, great article over at Comic Alliance. Laura Hudson did an article entitled The Big Sexy Problem with Superheroines and Their Liberated Sexuality. Highly recommend that you check out that article. It was mind-blowing and really interesting for me to read. She really breaks a lot of the stuff down that we're talking about. So definitely recommend you check that out.
I mean,
anyway,
it's essentially the same thing. She's saying in much more detailed and more erudite manner what we've just said, and it's the same thing that applies to Catwoman as well.
Right.
It is. I seem to have some gas today. Rage gas. It is
the worst
male
kind.
Written. The best kind. Anyway,
Now y'all have read this, kind of not to review, but walk. I mean, what the hell is going on? I mean,
Catwoman gets bombed.
Yeah, and so she's finding a new place.
A new place and a new any new jobs to bring in the money. She goes undercover as a bartender at some kind of Russian orgy club. Beats up.
Well, no, that was her job. She was assigned to that because she needed a job, and so she was assigned to go undercover because these Russians, they like to hire whores out, but they only like to have the English speaking ones, so they don't know what they're talking about during their business, their backroom business. But Catwoman knows Russian, so.
Of course she does.
Of course.
She stumbles upon her old pimp or some old John from when she used to be a prostitute. Because she did. That is evidently still being maintained as being in continuity. Thank you, Frank Miller.
Please don't take away year one because I like it a lot.
Beats him up. Then goes home to her new safe house, new apartment. Batman pays a visit.
Well, the new apartment isn't really even hers. She's squatting.
Yeah, yeah.
Batman finds her.
Yeah, of course he's gonna find her.
You don't gotta explain that.
And then they get it on, and by get it on, we mean full penetrative sex on
full penetrative
panel.
Sex across three pages, fully lit.
Wow,
I didn't think it was that bad. I've seen worse in mangas.
But why?
You know, this is a mainstream, this is easily, and without joking or hyperbole, this is the most explicit sex scene I've ever seen in what is presented as a mainstream DC Universe comic. Now, I can't deny that it is appropriately rated. It does have the T-plus rating on it, the 16s and ups. It's essentially an R rating, or what we in the UK would call an 18s rating. Mm-hmm. And frankly, regardless of the fact that it's appropriately rated, that to me is not anything that has any place in a mainstream superhero comic book. There are imprints for this, you know.
This is what I was talking about before we got on the show. The sex scene is just, to me, okay, it's going to happen. Batman and Catwoman have that history. The thing is, it just seemed out of place to me. Here you've got this history of Catwoman going on, and you're wanting to find out more about her and her new place and how she's, and all of a sudden it's just like it was just there. I think that's what pisses me off more about it than anything is just like, okay, why right here? Why right now? This could have happened two or three issues later on. I wanted to know more about her new story.
Does it tell you about her? I mean, does it tell you anything about her?
As a comic, it does a pretty good job of telling you who Catwoman is. You know, I'm not going to slate it for that. It does. It gives you a very solid introduction, fills in her past, just, yeah, it's a solid comic to show you what Catwoman is about, or at least this rather more skeevy version of Catwoman is about.
Why does she wear lingerie under her?
Why not? I don't know. Anyway. Just saying.
You've got to wear bra and panty to, you know, prevent chafing.
No, oh. I understand that, but, like, wouldn't you wear, like, a sports bra or something under that?
She
I mean,
did get fireballs.
If you have a body post. Like that, you've got to wear push-ups bras, man. You got to wear that Victoria's Secret to...
Okay.
Believe me, that is far from the only issue. Like, there's, like, this is wrong on, like, three levels. There's the whole, titillation masquerading as female empowerment.
Right.
There is the general explicit nature of the thing. And there are the Vertigo and Max imprints exist for 18s and up materials. That's why it shouldn't have to be in this, you know. I'm not making some, it's not some think of the children thing. This is not some, oh, there should never be anything like this in comics. As I say, it's been in comics since the 70s. But I certainly don't feel that, you know, there's a mature reader's imprint so that this sort of thing is not, it doesn't have to, or is not supposed to happen on panel. Like, literally, guys, we're not joking. The last page of the comic is a full-on splash page of Catwoman actively being penetrated by Batman.
If you took, and this is another point that Laura Hudson made, but, I mean, if you took the text off of this page and you put it with a lineup of other, like, fanficky sex scenes... I probably wouldn't be able to tell you which one was an actual panel that appeared.
It looks like something pulled off of Hentai Foundry or somewhere like that.
Yeah, like it was something like, yeah, I mean, it's very well done, but it still has a very like fanfic, fantasy kind of feel to it.
The most hilarious thing to me about the whole thing has been the deniers. I don't specifically mean people who, I mean, if you don't mind this, you don't mind it, okay? I probably have a 3.5 argument on Twitter with you about it because I did this week.
Yeah. A lot of discussions on Twitter at the end of it,
if you can just say, I didn't mind it, you didn't mind it, please, please do not come at me with some attempt at rationalizing this so that it is somehow progressive or challenging. It's not. It is not progressive. It is actively regressive.
Yeah.
To regress the character to this level. But what is most hilarious to me is the people who deny what that panel is even showing. I gave up very quickly on a comic book resources forum thread with a number of people say, oh, because of what we'd seen in previous panels and the fact that her zip didn't go that low, they couldn't possibly be having sex.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I don't think that the act is the problem, because their relationship is sort of in building to this
hold on, this is a key point that we haven't told you that we've left out. As part of the reboot, Selina doesn't know that Batman is Bruce Wayne anymore.
Oh, really? Okay, yes. I didn't know that.
Well, this is nasty, anonymous fuckbuddying.
Right.
Okay, that makes it worse.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, like, I can't believe I'm about to say something nice about Jeff Loeb, but Jeff Loeb actually took, decades of sexual tension between Catman and Batwoman. Will they, won't they, can they, could they, should they, other opposite sides of the law, and allowed it to make that a evolutionary step by allowing her to find out that he was Bruce Wayne and for them to finally enter into a relationship in the real world together. And Grant Morrison carried it on through his work, and they were making sexy times in Grant Morrison's work, but not on panel. But here, that's been taken away, so first of all, it's hard to even know how much of that even counts anymore. And it just turns into this really, really skeevy, anonymous gimp mask sex. I mean, obviously Batman knows who she is because it's fucking Batman, but she doesn't know who he is, and that is.
Let me narrow this down for you right now.
How do we know which Batman it is?
Okay, here's what matters. All right, let's take two. Let me sum this up for y'all real quick here, and then we'll kind of move on. But here's my point. Okay, Batwoman, Green Lantern, right? Two things we reviewed last week. We made a point to mention that in Batwoman, yes, there is partial nudity, right? Because you just can't see it. But there is, even though this is a very well-done comic, there's still female partial nudity. This is Green Lantern Corps, or Green Lantern, right? This is Hal Jordan, right? How many times was Hal naked, or partially naked, in this issue? Not fucking once, all right?
That's the issue.
That's the problem. Why do women in comics have to get naked in order for it to be considered female empowerment? All right? The male characters are not getting naked in their issues.
Thank God, they're not.
But why not? I mean, why not? These are very well, you know, very nicely drawn guys. There's a couple of sort of titillating shots where Hal's like jumping through the air and you can see part of an abdomen or you can see like some of his back, which looks really nice. But there's not a single shot with him without a shirt on. So what's the fucking difference, right? Why?
Because men... Sure, because it's been since the beginning of time. Wait, since the beginning of time, men have been more visual creatures, and women have been more audio.
And that's the problem right there, right? It's that these comics are being targeted to men. That's the fucking problem in this reimagined, rebooted DC universe, which is supposed to be more diverse and reach more readers. They've gone back to fucking catering to boys.
Well, you say back like it had actually gone away.
No, but I mean, I'm saying
I'm not disputing your point, is like asking everybody to drop 5 decades of precedent that.
And it's just, but that's where I'm saying, like, there's the problem. Go back through your last few issues of 52, and when you have a female character and a male character, how many times is that female character partially nude, and how many times is that male character partially nude? Now,
And most of 52.
Who did?
No, sorry, I was thinking of 52 rather.
Now, and me. I'll give you, like, even some of this, like, Red Hood, because obviously the guys are at the beach, so they don't, you know, he's partially nude, if it were, but he's wearing boxer like trunks. He's not wearing like a Speedo or anything.
And then, of course, ask yourself, why is that scene set at the beach?
Yeah, right. Is it so that you can see him in trunks, or is it so you can see her in a
bikini? There for the purposes of that, you know, right. And that's just the knock-on effect.
So,
but
anyway.
Yeah, I mean, was there another point I wanted to make about this whole Catwoman thing? No, just that it was, it's just nasty. Just nasty. And all the millions of people saying it can't be wrong. Right.
Anyway, all right, so we've hammered this home again. If you haven't checked it out, I'm sure you probably have, but just just keep it in mind. Like I said, I have no intention of reading Red Hood at all. Not that I was, and I would have.
I
may
had
have
no
been
intention
in,
of reading it either.
To go back in that, to be fair, it's not that I don't expect this sort of attitude from Catwoman. Your dad knows Catwoman is sexy. You know, your granddad knows Catwoman was sexy. Adam West, Julie Newmar. You know, this is, that is the association that exists with Catwoman. That is the thing. So I don't object. Yeah, let me just make it clear again. Don't object to Catwoman being a sexy sort of book. Gillam March, I enjoyed his work on Gotham City Sirens. No, he draws a sexy lady. Was looking forward to seeing what he was doing with Catwoman. Really didn't mind the fact that the first panel was cleavage and that every other shot was framed around her admittedly fully clothed ass. I did raise an eyebrow when we got to the scene where she was masquerading as the bartender and just popped her top open to distract her old John so she could beat him up. But, you know, it was... I don't, as a rule, object to the way Catwoman is acting in this. It's the actual execution of I don't mind her attitude as a character, but the execution of it leaves something to be desired. Whereas conversely, the Starfire thing is just insulting and disgusting and wrong.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, it's an interesting debate. It's going to go on. I mean, this is not going to close the door on it, probably for us or even the larger debate. But I think it's something that needs to be mentioned. It needs to be talked about because it's not going to change, alter, become different unless that dialogue keeps happening. And it is changing. I mean, there's a large female readership out there.
I've got a few comments from female readers saying that they didn't mind, you know. So, you know, but frankly, I think that, and this is going to be terribly generalizing and it is kind of a bad thing to say, but I think that to not mind this is to not understand the underlying issue.
Right. Yeah, or to just say, well, that's what... I mean, it's kind of like you said, Nicole, you know, it's like, well, that's the way it is.
Or to make it worth the underlining.
Right, to just say, oh, well, that's the way it is, or it's been that way. It doesn't have to be that way, though. Writers make choices. Writers and artists make choices
about how... These are the way they are because man decided this is how it will be.
Right.
So the new DC 52 is about shocking its readers. Is that basically what it's becoming
now? It has happened, but I don't know, but...
Are you saying that... Okay, let me ask you a question. Are you saying that Catwoman would be portrayed differently if it was a female writer?
No. No, and I don't want to make that that point either. And that's why I shy away from saying that just a male creator. But it's a way of thinking about those female characters within comics. Yes, it can be. I mean, even, you know, Gail Sloan pointed out this week that there have been some female artists that have done some horrible cheesecake stuff that had to be, you know, pulled back. And female writers can do the same thing as well.
She herself has been responsible for a million scenes of naked people of various sexes.
Right.
Lying in beds together.
So I caution to say, you know, that only a male creator can do that, because certainly female creators can do that as well. But I think it becomes to the larger sense of the editorial process and all of those kinds of things to rein these sort of things in and say, is this really doing the character service, or is this something that we're doing as a service to the fans? And if you...
as is so often the case when something bad or ill or like something that is so evidently and obviously going to be ill received in a comic, you do sort of wonder what was the pitch meeting like.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Where was editorial when they said, "Yeah, that's great. Wipe Starfire's mind." Yeah.
Yeah.
Does this not feel like this is like do or die time? Like, hey, do what you can to sell the book.
No, I don't.
We're dead. I mean,
I think they're the editors and things are just overwhelmed. They're trying to come up with story arcs. Things are going to make it through. You know, they're trying things out, but I'm trying not to go the conspiracy route or to even go like the alarmist route and say that, you know, this is DC's vision of women in the world and blah, blah, blah. I don't think so. I think it's just, these are individual creators that are trying to do things and they just need to understand that this is not the way to do it. You know?
Individual
creators. Well,
let's
see what happens with the next issue, you know, see if it's as controversial or if it actually gets back onto plot, you know.
Yeah,
and that's individual creator that should probably be noted, whose talent was already being called into question prior to these launches.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking
about the guys
Del
that
here.
Were going. They're like, "When is Winix? Winix doing this? Is he doing anything else? Is he doing Gen Lost?"
No.
And Lob Dell's doing this and Teen Titans and Superboy.
And Superboy,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, and everybody's been going, really, why is X getting this many books? You know, now, I don't mind Scott Lobdell. I've not read a lot of Scott Lobdell's work. Say that three times fast. so I have no real precedent, but I have seen a lot of slamming of him ahead of time. You know, so, Batwing.
Yeah,
thank you,
Batwing,
LL Prime is just, and that was good. I mean, I didn't read it, but I heard that was good.
Yeah, I heard Batwing was really good. Positive.
And that was already a thorny issue as it was.
Yeah. So
the idea
that
Africa,
see, it can be good.
Batman, you know, we managed that, you know. But
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they already won because we're talking about the issue. You know, that's
right.
What they want.
Well,
you know,
yeah, but
won.
Still, it's not the
didn't
way.
Get no money for it though.
Yeah.
They get my money.
Yeah,
but
they didn't
get
my money. Yeah, they didn't get my money for it. All right, so we have beaten this to death. There will be no end mass discussion at the end of the show. This has been it. We front loaded everything, but you're still going to get great reviews, which we are going
to. Suffice it to say, not a proud week.
No.
For DC's heroines.
No, not.
So thank God then for Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman. Woo. Take it, Triplet.
Oh yeah.
All right, Chris, go for it.
Awesome. Okay, I got Wonder Woman. One. Yay. And it's a female character. Yay. And guess what? Remember when Wonder Woman sucked? When JMS was doing it?
Yeah.
Those days are over. The book's actually pretty good now.
Nice.
The first thing that I'm going to tell you that I noticed about the book, which it's not new because it's happened in Wonder Woman before, the book is pretty violent. I mean,
Wonder Woman,
did you read it? I mean, did you?
Mm-hmm. Pick, okay. Awesome. I have it right here. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. I mean, because, like, the first thing I noticed about it, just going through it, this feels like a Vertigo-type violence. I mean, because there's, like, a lot of violence in this issue.
Well, I don't know.
Woman,
it's not that bad. I mean, I heard people
like
saying
for, like, a main DC character, like a Superman, a Batman, a Wonder Woman, it was a bit much. But, you know, it didn't go too far, I don't think. But it was a bit, like... One scene that stands out is there's a character that shows up in it does some sort of a magic, cuts off a horse's head.
It's got the whole Godfather scene here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but you don't see the head get hacked off on panel.
No, you don't. But out of the gushing neck wound that you do see, centaurs climb out of it in very gory, blood-dripping fashion. I'm not knocking this. I like this. I'm just saying, that's kind of a bit much for, a main DC character. But that was something that stood out about it. The art stood out about it, which is... What's his name?
Cliff Chang.
I have heard of him before, but I'm not sure if I've ever...
I literally bought this because Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang did a story called Dr. 13, Architecture and Morality. It was a backup strip in a Spectre comic a couple of years ago, and it was really good. And I have literally bought this on the strength of that creative team previous work on that story. And holy damn, do I love this guy's art.
Yeah, the art's great. I mean, it looks really nice. It's kind of, I don't know how to compare it.
No, it's not even quite exactly the same as the Architecture and Morality. I mean, if it evokes anything to me, along with the really, there's some bright neon scenes in a city early on, but there's some real autumnal and earth tones involved in a large portion of this, and coupled with the smooth lines and angles that he employs, I think he's deliberately trying to evoke a sort of Grecian pottery or sculpture work in it, which is
maybe
that would make sense.
It does have a sort of an animation design to it. You kind of like a Justice League or a Batman. Square jaws or something. Like you were saying, but it's really nice. It looks really good.
Love his actual depiction of Wonder Woman as well.
Yeah,
she looks beautiful. Diana looks awesome.
She's tall and beautiful and athletic and muscular, and she's not all about the jubblies.
That's why I want to ask. We were just talking about the whole sexuality in comics. How is what we just discussed different than what's in this comic? Because I mean, she's completely, she's completely naked in a few scenes in this comic book. Mm. Plus, you have another girl running around in her underwear.
The answer is actually very simple, which is it's not designed to titillate. There are no improbable poses or anything like that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I'm not, I mean, again, there's a certain, a line that's out there that needs to be pulled back. The question again is why do women have to appear in various forms of undress when male characters generally do not or are not seen? And then how is that level of undress handled within the issue? So I still think it's an issue as far as why do women constantly have to be naked in comics in order to be in a comic?
Well, Wonder Woman has
how that's handled, is the question.
Wonder Woman has always felt to me like somebody who probably did sleep in the buff.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and so if it makes sense within the sequence. But again, writers are making the choice to do the scene in the particular way.
Yeah, that's true. They are. As I say, there's nothing about the art that is actually designed to titillate.
Good.
It's just a case of, she's got a sheet over her there, but that's because she was sleeping, not because tits.
It basically comes out to be a big kind of a fight issue. I mean, because it's not an origin story. You're not being introduced to Wonder Woman for the first time. She's been around. Like the character that you're introduced to, this girl named Zola, she basically comes in contact with Wonder Woman. Like I mentioned before, the centaurs are attacking her. Basically, these creatures, mythological creatures, want her dead. In a nutshell. She is sent to someone that can protect her, and the person that's going to protect her is Wonder Woman. And then she knows who Wonder Woman is. I mean, she kind of, at first says, are you? And she says, no, my name's Diana. And then when Wonder Woman's actually, putting her, armor on, to go and, protect her, that's when she's like, you're Wonder Woman. And then she keeps saying, no, I'm Diana. She doesn't want to be called Wonder Woman. She keeps saying, I'm Diana.
That softness of Wonder Woman. It's like, I'm a person. Don't put me up there. Just call me Diana. It's my name.
But it's not, like I said, it's not an origin story. I mean, you get what Wonder Woman is. She's a warrior. She's a fighter. The basic things that you've gotten from all previous kind of Wonder Woman comics. But it's just kind of like she's just thrown into it. Your introduction is basically to this character, this Zola, who she's protecting, and these godlike creatures are trying to stop her. And like I said, with the violence, she fights these centaurs. She like headbutts them. She like cuts the arm off of one of them. It's a it's cool. I mean, it's a good issue. And also, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Oh, it also, I think like previously, like when JMS was doing, and I can't remember, but I think the gods had been kind of removed from Wonder Woman. So now the gods are kind of like back, because like I want to say like a while back, wasn't there like a storyline in which like the gods left DC Comics or something happened, like the gods left and then Wonder Woman is like left behind? Am I remembering correctly?
No.
I don't know. You don't read
was that Infinite Crisis, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know, but it was before Infinite Crisis, I think, but it's just kind of neat to have like the whole mythological stuff coming back.
Yeah, this is very heavily mythological.
It's heavily mythological.
The issue is framed with he's not named, but if you're paying attention, you'll understand that it's Apollo who has taken three girls and transformed them into I don't know what the Greek equivalent of the Fates is.
They're like oracles.
Yeah, to tell him what is going on right now, and you know, the answer to that question is why Zola is being hunted by these centaurs, who have actually been sent by a mysterious woman who's not identified, wearing a robe of peacock feathers. But it seems that essentially the children of Zeus has gone astray, and the children of Zeus
like
have taken
missing.
An interest
something
in this girl
happened to him.
For reasons that we shan't divulge.
I do one thing I do like some of the lines in it, like the dialogue is in it, like when this guy that at first we don't know who's Apollo's, you know, he's like entertaining these ladies like on the top of a penthouse in Singapore, and they're like asking him questions, and he says something like I guess you could say I'm the son of a king, and he doesn't say son as in like, you know, father son, but son as in like, you know, the sun, you know.
He's
like, S-U-N. He's like dropping these little hints, and it's just a good book, and like everything, like the message that he gets from the oracles, it's kind of cryptic at the end. And at the end of the issue, we find out that the Hermes is one of these characters that shows up, where we weren't sure who he was at the beginning of the issue. And I'm just going to go ahead and spoil the ending. You know, the reason that everybody's trying to kill Zola is because she's pregnant with the child of Zeus.
Ooh. Zeus has got his ardor up again.
Uh-oh.
And the prophecy that Apollo gets from the oracles is regarding, it says, one of your father's children will murder another and take their place. And he asks them where Zeus is, and they reply, he doesn't exist yet.
And I guess I should mention Kal-El Prime told us it's Final Crisis where the gods were being killed and they ran off.
Yeah, I knew it was something, but I wanted to mention it because it seemed like the gods hadn't been involved in like Wonder Woman's comics in a while, mm-hmm. and it's really cool to get that back.
I love it.
Like when Greg Rucka was writing Wonder Woman, you had things like Medusa, you had Ares, and it was good stuff, and we're getting them back, and it's like,
and that's the reason why I loved Wonder Woman when I was younger. When I first started reading Wonder Woman comics, that's why I got into it. So it was the whole Greek mythology.
I like a bit of myth, but Greek myth isn't my mythology of choice, but yeah. I'm not objecting to this. It's like Greek myth is full of bastards who come down and screw with mortals, you know. Norse myth, that's worth that.
Right.
The Norse gods were the originals.
Come on, the Norse gods still mess with humans.
The
Are
Norse
you
gods
me?
Were the the Norse gods were like the original superheroes.
Right, because
they
they're
went
not
on quests. And there were clearly delineated lines of good and evil.
And Norse gods aren't like, you know, in the Greek mythology, there's this definite thing where like the gods are like the creators and they're in some way and they control all of these things. Whereas the Norse gods are much more, they're more heroes. They're more great, you know, vast, epic characters. Yeah. They're not considered to be, they didn't make humans or do any of that kind of
stuff
per se. I've always
felt that Norse myth deals a little bit more with that whole malleability of reality and the idea of the, again, it all stems from the idea that those were the spoken tales, whereas Greek, birthplace of civilization and everything, wrote all their shit down.
Right.
So there's less of that malleability of the concept.
Even within Norse religion, like you don't, you know, in the Greek religion, you would pray and give offerings to Zeus, or you would pray and give offerings and in the hopes that they would give you things. But in the Norse, like, religion. You don't do that.
Come and smash us.
Yeah, you don't really do. You don't do that. You don't. You give offerings to like the wood spirits or like, you know, the spirit sprites. You know, those kinds of things. But you're not really going to ask. You may ask for like guidance from like a god like that, but they're not going to. You know, Odin's not going to give you anything. You know, and the fact that you would even ask for something like that is demeaning to yourself, really.
I had a short discussion with somebody about this, a new reader, about this issue on Twitter, and I thought he raised a very good point, which is that it doesn't really serve as a particularly good introduction to Wonder Woman.
No, it doesn't. Not really. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, the bad thing about it.
I mean, as a number one...
But the thing is, though...
Broadly speaking, it should, but Wonder Woman... You see, I was... It's like... Wonder Woman.
It's Wonder Woman.
Everybody knows Wonder Woman.
I mean, all you need to know is that she is Wonder Woman. She's a warrior, American bikini. You know.
I know you're joking when you say that, but you think about it really. You know, Wonder Woman is on a par with Batman and Superman as something that is recognizable by the popular culture. But everybody knows that Krypton exploded. Everybody knows about Batman's dead parents. But if you ask them what Wonder Woman's origin is, you get a blank look. And that's because Wonder Woman has such a rubbish twee origin. It's a lot of confusing, muddled concepts that no media has ever really been able to iron out into a smooth story to actually present as an origin, as a starting place for a story. You know, you didn't get it in the one Linda Carter TV show. You didn't get it in the Justice League cartoon. You didn't get it in the Wonder Woman TV pilot, but well, that's probably the least of it.
I mean, you got what you needed from Justice League. She came from an island of women. She left it, you know.
Yeah, but that's it, you know. But then,
that's all you really need.
Whenever
you know?
It's all you really need when you're dealing with Wonder Woman.
And go watch
the Wonder Woman was a cartoon movie that came out.
Yes, that managed.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point that that he was making though was that even without an origin or an introduction, he also didn't feel that he took away from it any real information about Wonder Woman. And he's not wrong there either. I mean, it does get the basic beats of Wonder Woman: statuesque, loving warrior princess, more prone to violence than some of her softer brethren like Superman, for instance. But really, and sorry Wonder Woman fans, but Wonder Woman in the eyes of the public really is just girl Superman.
Yeah, basically. That does happen.
Except that she's more willing to use violence, and this issue does get that across. And
okay,
it seems to me that it's something of a tacit admission of this intrinsic weakness. I mean, let's be honest, like that intrinsic weakness of the character, that she doesn't really offer anything particularly unique, and she has a really muddled origin, is why DC has struggled to, although they always advertise her and in-universe treat her as one of the Trinity, she's never actually enjoyed the level of mainstream recognition and multimedia success that Batman and Superman have. And it seems to me that this issue is something of a tacit admission of that fact by being all about how the story and setting into which Wonder Woman has been placed is very different. Like Azzarello has stated and made it clear that his mission statement for this is that it's essentially a horror comic, and we see overtones of that. We haven't gone full bore on it yet, but that's really like changing the circumstances around Wonder Woman rather than actually trying to do something new with Wonder Woman. If you follow what I'm saying,
Yeah, and that's what I like about it, because I don't want to know if she was made by clay. I don't want to know if she had parents. I don't want to know all this crappy origin stuff. I just want to know, is she Wonder Woman? Is she going to do something that's entertaining? I mean, is she going to do something that's going to, you know, interest me story-wise? And she did. You know, it was interesting. And before we leave it real quick, I just want to mention, when you first see Wonder Woman, we already talked about how she was asleep in the bed. I like that. Because it's almost like she's been sleeping the whole time the JMS run was going. It's like since
it
Greg
was all
Rucka,
a terrible book, dream.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Greg Rucka quit writing the book. I feel like she's been sleeping that entire time. And when I read this, it's like she's finally awake again. This is the Wonder Woman I like.
Awesome.
Hey, I got a quick question for you guys. Okay, well, you know all this discussion about costumes for Wonder Woman. What do you think about this costume?
Basically,
I like it.
Costume.
I mean, it's basically, I mean, it's no worse or better than it was.
Well, Blue Boots suck, and she's full of, the choker is all right. The weird armband is rubbish, but it's just, you know, not offensive.
Fine.
And, I mean, it's, she's got lots of weird, pointless little extra lines on her body.
I'm just glad she's not wearing a stupid jacket.
Yeah, and it depends on which artist and which panel. I mean, I know that Jim Lee's work on it, like her, you know, the halter part of it sort of defies gravity, but...
well, welcome to comics, man.
Yeah, exactly. So,
no, but this guy in particular, like, she is really, really strapped down. They are not selling for that at all.
Right, you know? And that's fine. That's what I'm saying. I think the Jim Lee version is a bit less believable.
Well, that's going to vary from artist.
Exactly. So, anyway... Okay.
But, you know, I think, so. You know, I'd say it's definitely a good book. I'll be back for the next issue or two.
I can't wait for the next issue.
But it's not my myth of choice, and it does feel more like a story that Wonder Woman has stumbled into rather than a story about Wonder Woman, which is not really what you would expect from a brand new relaunch number one issue. But it's still good, and I'm still going to give more of it a look. So.
Yeah.
I was surprised by it. I mean, I wasn't sure. I was on the fence, but when I got it, I liked it. I'm going to keep getting it.
I liked it, too.
All right, very good.
But of course, I've been a Wonder Woman fan since I was a little girl.
That's it. You know, that's what Wonder Woman is defined as. She is defined as, and I don't, you know, this is not how I define her, but it's like, she is the superhero for girls.
Right. Well, see, we were just talking about this with Catwoman, you know? This is what girls and women want, is Wonder Woman. They don't...
Everybody,
I think most people want to be related more to Wonder Woman than Catwoman.
Yeah. Women who have never read a comic book relate to Wonder Woman.
Right.
Look up Wonder Woman. Yeah. That's Linda Carter for you.
Yeah.
But it just shows the character's presence in the popular culture. But it's, you know, people say they you know, Wonder Woman, but that's just because they only know Wonder Woman as the kick-ass superhero for women, and nothing else.
Yeah.
Because she's a bit rubbish, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. So, all right, Nicole, on to you. And I will be right back. Go ahead, Nicole. And I'm going to be right back.
Because I read, I'm the only one that read the comic that I'm reviewing. But I tell people, you all need to start reading this series. I'm reviewing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2. Because, well, I was hoping that the first
Secret
issue
of the
was... Yeah, the first issue blew my mind. I had so much fun with it. I was like... I really hope the second issue could do just as good. Well, guess what? It did. It's awesome. The good thing about this issue is it starts right where the last issue ended. It left you with a good cliffhanger, and it answers all your questions. It shows you the relationship, how Raphael and Casey get together and how they get to be good friends. But the biggest surprise is it tells you how Raphael was not part of the other four. Somehow he mysteriously got separated when he was a young turtle, even before he mutated into, you know, the hero we know. He actually got separated from the other three, and the other three are looking for him. Raph doesn't hardly even remember his name. That's how severe this is. He feels alone and lost, and do you blame him? As far as he knows, he's the only person that looks like him out in this world. So, and then you see like the side story about her teaching the other three why it's important to have him as part of their team. It's such a good story. And this is another thing. April, she's a very strong character in this storyline. She fights for herself, even though she knows she is outnumbered. She will fight for herself, and these little turtles and this little rat that she's come to love. She will fight for him, even though she's going to get her ass handed to her. And I think that's another good thing. We're talking about women empowerment. This like whole comic, this whole episode of the show. Here's another good reason. Sometimes you see like damsel in distress all the time. With the women that aren't the superheroes. Well, here's one gal that will prove you wrong.
We're good we tied all this together. I think
So you see more of how she came to love these little creatures. And Oh, you guys really need to pick this up. It's really good. I can't wait to see how they bring the four together.
I just want to get number one. Reprint that IDW.
Yes, they are reprinting.
Oh, what if I could?
Yeah. If I find some more number ones, I'll pick them up for you guys because you guys need to read this. It's so good. I read this issue 3 times myself. Not because I had to, because I wanted to. I read it. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I went back and reread it right after something. So good. There's so many good panels in here. Especially if you're a fan of the old comic books or even the old cartoons, there's a lot of little background things that you're just like, oh, that's great. The design of the sewers is awesome. The new design of the Foot Clan looks great. And yeah, this is a must, people. Go get it. So, we can't really discuss it because no one's read it, but I know you guys will read it.
So. Yeah, I'd talk about it if I could get the damn thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's...
I saw it.
I can get the trade somehow.
It's just not... I don't know.
It's awesome.
It's cool.
I love it.
That's it.
And then you see how Casey gets his mask.
Casey's in this.
Okay. Yeah, Casey, there's a big part of how Casey and Raph act together, and you can just see their relationship just really blossoming, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to be just the best buddies for a long time. So
sweet.
It's really good.
Awesome. All right. So check it out. Turtles.
See, quick review.
Nice. That's good. We'll take it. Okay. So, I am going to talk about DC Universe Presents Dead Man. So the Dead Man is the first that they're presenting off of this. To sort of, preface, Dead Man was like a big part of course, Brightest Day and the events of that. But really, it's been a long time, I think, since Dead Man has sort of been Dead Man, hasn't it? I mean, he's not really...
A year, I guess.
Or more. I mean, how long... But, I mean, he's appeared in a lot of stuff, but he hasn't been, like, in his own comic or anything, has he? I mean...
Was he floating around in 52?
I don't think so.
Well,
yeah, he really hasn't been at the fore of anything, all right?
He hasn't really done anything.
And really what Deadman has...
He was part of Hawk and Dove.
Right. I mean, well, but in the sense that Deadman has been sort of... it's that ghost guy that can sort of possess people. I mean, and has appeared in stuff to talk, you know, to warn the characters of foreboding things or, you know, to do different things like that. But as far as Deadman being Deadman, like Batman... You know,
he's been
catches
in Brave
criminals.
And the Bold, the cartoon, and that's basically where he's been.
Well, right. But I mean, like,
never
you know,
him again.
Like, day-to-day, Batman basically punches, you know, bad guys in the face for mugging people, and, you know that's kind of like Batman's day-to-day thing. But as far as, like, Deadman doing his day-to-day thing, like, that's not really been a part of comics for a while. He's just been
the guy
it's
hard
that...
with Deadman whenever he doesn't... He's not physically existent, so it's hard to build up a retinue of supporting characters or archenemies, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Neil Adams kind of understood that when he created the character because of the whole force driving Deadman forward for the first couple of years of his storytelling existence is the genuine search for the guy who killed him.
Yeah. Right.
And when you strip away that level of purpose, he does turn into like more of like a 1970s horror comic character, like... For example, Man Thing, where or anything from House of Mystery, where it's like a different story that he has to get into each time because he's inserting himself into the life of somebody else.
Right, you know? And so that's what you're kind of coming into with this. Like, this is a nice example of a number one issue where they're basically not retelling his origin. I mean, they're sort of giving you his origin without. Making you feel like this is a new character. There's definitely a context where he's existed, but they talk about how he was killed, and then basically after he died was given the opportunity. The way they portray it in this story, which I think is a little bit alteration of his origin, was that essentially there's a balance between the bastard that he was in life and who he needs to be in order to move on. And so he's... So his mission given to him by this goddess is to, I can't remember her name at the moment, but is to...
Ramakrishna.
Yes, thank you.
Rama?
Yes.
Ramakrishna.
Yeah. To take over people's lives and help... It's Quantum Leap is what it is.
I don't know. That's exactly what I mean. Like right. each new story right. is something new. You can't build up an ongoing world for Dead Man like that.
Right, and so that's essentially what he's... And so this story not only sets that up, tells you who he is... And it sort of explains, like, the next person he's supposed to take over, which is, like, a wounded veteran.
hope they make that into a TV show, like they keep hinting.
Deadman is completely a good idea for it.
It's Quantum Leap. It was a great show.
Exactly.
It's basically a spiritual.
That's what'll drag it down.
Just put it on Wednesday nights at about 9 o'clock. I will
turn it off though. If in the first 5 minutes he takes over somebody and it's a weird situation, he goes, "Oh boy," and then I'll just be like.
Doing with like, my daughter. Oh boy.
Yeah, oh boy. And change the channel. But he sees this person that he's going to take next, and he decides to do some other stuff before he takes it over. But it's kind of interesting because, again, you see that he has the ability to, you know, you get a good sense of his power set, essentially. You see a nice cross section of some of the lives that he's touched and been a part of. And then he just sort of, you know, another thing that he does in here is he tries to reconnect with someone that he knew in life. He seems like there's some other goal, but they don't really make clear what that is yet. I think that's something that will be apparent, but there's a woman that he's trying to talk to and keeps freaking her out because he keeps jumping through this crowd of people talking to her.
Scene,
it was awesome.
I like the idea of that scene, yeah.
Everybody should walk by, he'd jump into that body. That was just great.
Yeah,
she couldn't get away from him.
She couldn't get away from him because she kept talking until the very end when she like made a point and like started yelling at him, and then like, oh, he's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah.
Oops.
I like that. She's knocking on his forehead.
Yeah. And I think this is an art thing that had been done before, but anytime they're possessed, you see the red aura around them. So you can kind of tell who he's in and who he's not or whatever. But I like it. I mean, I think it sets a nice tone. You get an idea for who he's trying to be versus who he was. And they really set up what a bastard he was really in that flashpoint in terms of his issue. Mm. Like that first issue, you really got to see Boston Brand being a total bastard in life. And if you've read that, I think it connects to the beginning of this in an interesting way because, you know, if he was anything like that in real life, yeah, he was a total bastard.
I'm glad this has turned out well then, because I know this was written by Paul Jenkins, and that's a writer whose star has fallen something very severely in the last few years.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was nice. I don't know how much, you know, again, this is part of the DC Presents, so Deadman's
is
not
it, oh yeah, going, okay, so is it a single story? Is it a multi-parter? What's
it's
the story?
A multi-parter.
It's continued.
Yeah, it's to be continued.
Because we don't really know what to expect from DC Comics Presents. Like, is it going to be a Deadman comic? Is it going to be a six-part Deadman story and then it'll be six issues about something else? We don't really know.
Yeah, and it said that, I mean, it says that it's 20 questions part one. So I don't know how many, you know, parts he's going to be in. But I think the idea here is that this is to be sort of an anthology, you know. And because this character, that is the thing. Deadman's really cool and he's great to throw into stuff. But I fully admit that this is not a character that really can support a complete ongoing series.
Lots of team ups.
Yeah.
You know,
he's the guest star.
He doesn't even work on a team. I don't think you could even put him on a team book. I mean, you can't even.
Well, nobody
do that.
Can see him. So.
Right, exactly. So it's like, this is a character that completely exists and is a utility character, I think, within the DC universe.
Wait, does he have something to do with JLA Dark?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't remember.
Find out.
I think he's a utility character, though. He's a character that shows up to do things for a purpose, but doesn't. He's hard to have around very long. I mean, he's, like you said, he was great in Brightest Day, but the best part of. But he was alive during Brightest Day.
He can interact with people.
Yeah.
Right.
Wednesday Comics, I think, was the last time he had a starring role of any kind.
So
as himself doing Deadman stuff, he had a strip in that.
Yeah,
damn Wednesday.
But
Comics. Where's my next Wednesday comic?
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and blow the ending of this though, because it was really nice.
It's a good ending. So if you don't want to hear it, plug your ears.
Right, plug your ears if you hadn't. But so he finally shows up to this wounded vet, and. Takes over his, you know, does the whole thing to like take over his body, which seems a bit more dramatic. Like, this is a, you know, obviously he can take over other people, but this is a much more like invasive sort of thing, I guess, that he's doing. And he talks about, he's going, there's sort of some internal dialogue, but you get to the last page, and
that was a surprise to me.
The goddess has shown up because he's got a gun to the guy's head. And he says, you're probably wondering why I ask you here. Because the whole thing, at the beginning of it, he's talking to her and says, well, you know, if I need to get a hold of you, how do I? And she's like, well, I'm a god. I get a hold of you. And he made that point later in the issue where it's like, you know, she'll show up and ask stuff of him, but he's never had her show up. And so he goes to shoot himself in the head, and she shows up. Sort of like, oh.
Holding his own body to ransom.
I do have your number. I do know how to get a hold of you.
I did not see that coming at all.
No.
No, that was an awesome thing.
No. So, anyway, really interesting stuff. I love the cover, by the way, of this. Where
who's
see,
the artist on this, by the way?
Bernard Chang.
Yeah. But the cover is really awesome where you see, like, Dead Man in Chains. So it's worth a read, I think. And I'm
you know, there's a lot of great art in here. They drew the goddess. I thought she looked beautiful.
And did we mention where our hooded woman was in the other issues? She's really early in this.
Moved so far beyond caring.
It's just sort of novel to me.
She is in Wonder Woman.
Where is she?
I couldn't spot her either, but I had to see it online. She is on the page in Wonder Woman, where Zola is running from the centaurs after she returns with Wonder Woman. She is just hidden behind a tree on the far, far right of the panel.
She would be out in the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, she was out in the woods with Resurrection Man.
Yeah.
Standing in front of the woods. It's the same page where Wonder Woman headbutts the centaur. It's the second the middle panel on the page, just hiding behind a tree. She's got no glow or anything.
She blends in so well with the background. Yeah. You can't tail. It always looks like a part of a tree.
That's the Earth Totem's coming through again.
I can't tell
you. Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that. Okay.
That's awesome. I like when they hide it good like that. So many of them, she's just sort of shoved into a crowd scene, so it's kind of nice to have her like really blend in or like be sort of like a Where's Waldo kind of moment.
Somebody would do an issue where they don't blend her in and she's like maybe helping the hero up when the hero falls down.
Like really?
Like really? Out in the front,
Yeah, really out in the forefront.
Right. Oh, that's how it was in Resurrection Man. You blatantly, she was, like I said, the best part of that.
Maybe she high-fives the hero or
that
something.
That would be awesome. Anyway, so you go, Dead Man.
I was very surprised with Dead Man. I really was.
I was
the
too.
The only reason I picked this up is because I went to a different comic book shop just to go check it out, and they're like, "Well, we're going to charge you more if you don't buy more than $5 worth of stuff." I'm like,
what?
"Screw it, I'll go buy another comic." Yeah, because they give extra charges if you don't spend more than $5. I'm like, "Fine, I'll go pick up another comic."
That's holding you at ransom. That's crazy.
So,
I would never.
Card or what?
I would never shop there again.
No, it's a new business, and so they'll slowly learn. But I'm like, screw it, I'll go buy another comic, and that's the reason.
No, you know, no, that's not what you do. Yeah, never do that as a consumer.
Were you paying by card or by cash?
By card.
Oh well, no, there are service charges.
Yeah, okay.
Small
and it wasn't like a tremendous charge. It was 50 cents. I'm like,
that's not
okay.
Yeah, and there's a service charge for certain sums of money.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
So I said, screw it, I'll go look for another comic.
I guess that's the right thing to do.
Well, we veered off in a direction.
Anyway,
I got a comic out of it.
No,
so.
but seriously, like the only two things in my poll were like Transformers and Green Lantern Corps. So I had a choice, and of course Catwoman was gone, Wonder Woman was gone, Red Hood was gone. My choices were like Blue Beetle, Dead Man, and what else? There's like one other like nobody cared about thing that was out. But anyway,
Captain Adam.
Captain Adam. Captain Adam was gone.
I grabbed Dead Man off the shelf too. So yeah, I wonder if Dead Man's just not selling too.
I don't know, but I will definitely like. I think I might take off Transformers and add Dead Man because. That I like it so far. I want to check it out. Anyway, okay.
Yeah. I had four.
I wish I knew Spanish so I could understand half.
That's an interesting. Hey, there's a. Well, I've got a second here because I've got a little bit of time left, but I don't want to take too much. There's a point in Batwoman. A friend of mine reads Spanish, and I had her read. Well, Melissa, she's been on the show before. She read Batwoman, and there's the part where. They speak Spanish or something, and apparently they got the tense wrong on it, which is awesome. Because
I didn't get to read that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You weren't with us when we talked about it last week.
That one was awesome.
I'm thinking about getting the digital issue, but I was waiting to hear what you guys said.
Well, I would say, you know, that's a point I didn't make about Batwoman last week, which I'll sort of go back and make now. If digital's the only way you can get it, I guess.
Yeah, they sold out of it. I was going to buy it. They sold out of it.
That's the one you really want to have in your hand.
That is one that's kind of like paper or GTFO.
Yeah.
Because the digital isn't just, it's simply not going to be able to replicate effectively the sprawling double page spread layouts that J.H. Williams does.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, if you have to read it, and it's a good comic, but you know, it's a solid comic, but you do buy Batwoman for the art.
Did it feel out of place when you read it, since it was a delayed comic? Like, it didn't feel
hold on pretty well.
DC relaunch book, it felt like
Jim Gordon had red hair, and Maggie Sawyer's been busted down into detective again. They made it fit.
Yeah, it works. Okay. So anyway, okay, I'll move on then and allow Chris to take over.
All right, feels final like review. We should have. Feels like we should have saved Wonder Woman for the end, but it segued so nicely out of the news.
No, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Damn straight. It was a good book.
Well, I'll be finishing us off with Ultimate Comics X-Men number 1, the last of the four new Ultimate series that are coming out by Nick Spencer. He of Morning Glories, Thunder Agents for DC, Cloak and Dagger for Marvel. Hardest working man in comics at the minute. He is all over the place. And art by Paco Medina. Who you would probably know best from Deadpool and New Mutants. Now, the funny thing about this issue is that it is really all set up. It mm-hmm. is coming off the back of Ultimate Fallout, in which it was announced to the world that mutants were created by the government, which was itself a plot thread that came out of Ultimate Origins, a series by Bendis from a couple of years ago. So this one is very much wearing its continuity pedigree on its sleeve. But this issue is still really getting all the ducks in a row. It seems like issue 2 will really be the issue where this starts. This issue is fine as far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. Not really through any fault of its own, but it just has... The X-Men have been splintered for so long. Like, the X-Men was the one book that didn't come back after Ultimatum before now.
Aren't they all dead?
Well, did a whole bunch of them die? Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the plot threads as they are splintered. Ultimate X's team of characters, Jean Grey, going by Karen Grant now, who else is on her team? Liz Allen of Ultimate Spider-Man, Wolverine's son, who is the character that appears on the cover of the issue. He's dressed in a Wolverine-looking costume on the cover. That doesn't happen in the course of the issue, but yeah, it is obviously going to be Wolverine's son. Jimmy is his name. I can't even. I didn't. Yes, Jimmy.
I think so. That's
sex. And a new character named. Oh, I don't. You know what? Derek. Derek is his name. He's a kind of an archangel-looking kind of guy. So they are. Karen's out trying to help mutants in the same way Professor X did, while the government is still trying to run damage control and refusing to redact its order in the wake of Ultimatum that mutants must be apprehended on sight or shot if they resist arrest. Rogue is on the run. Iceman, the Human Torch, and Kitty Pryde, following on the plot thread from Ultimate Spider-Man, are hiding out in the Morlock tunnels. But whenever they hear about Rogue being attacked, decide that they can't hide anymore and must get proactive. And that is essentially... Oh, and he's not in it to much of an extent, but following on from Ultimate Fallout again, and Ultimates 3 as well, Quicksilver is attempting to exploit this chaos. He has been, as we saw in Ultimate Fallout, he's been found again by the Scarlet Witch, not dead after the events of Ultimates 3, and he seems to be trying to exploit the mutant crisis to in a sort of white slavery sort of way. So it's really pulling plot threads from all across the Ultimate Universe.
I think that's why I got confused with this. It's just there, like,
yeah,
okay.
This absolutely does its best to be an establishing issue to introduce all these concepts to you, but much like the Ultimates and... No, not Ultimate Spider-Man. Much like the Ultimates, it is following on very directly from Ultimate Fallout, where all of these pieces were set up. And this, I guess, maybe if you want to carry the analogy of being pieces set up, this is where the dominoes all start to topple over and everything starts to bleed into one another. But it seems like next issue will really be, where everything begins. It's a solid issue. It is mostly set up. I like Nick Spencer's work. I think what kind of hinders the issue is that its first scene is absolutely its strongest.
I was just gonna say that. I'm like, this first part of this comic book was amazing.
I think the rest
of the comic kind of went downhill because I was like, I want to know what's going on with this first part of the story.
It's not even so much the case of needing to know any more about it. It's simply the fact
that you wanted to know what the consequences were and stuff. You're like,
I don't know. It's not even like consequences. It's just that nothing is as dramatic or shocking. I better tell everybody what it is. Karen Grant, Jean Grey, I'm going to keep calling her Jean Grey, even though she's actually going by Karen now, comes to a nice little suburban home where the daughter has started displaying mutant power, sits down and has a discussion with her mother, explains that she's not going to be taken to one of the government camps. She's looking to help mutants. And Karen asks, can I ask, where is Mr. Pleasant today? And she asks, where is Chelsea this afternoon? And the mother responds, she's upstairs taking a nap. She tires out easily. And Karen asks, where's Mr. Pleasant today? Silence. He's upstairs too. And Karen goes, forgive me for being so direct, but would you mind if I just went up and then a shot rings out. And the dad comes upstairs, gun in hand. And that is the state that the world has collapsed to after the events of Ultimatum and what has been revealed now. Parents are killing their own children rather than have them be mutants and see them be taken by the government. It was a shocking and upsetting first scene that just stunned me. And nothing else in the comic actively lives up to that first scene. I would have to label it the weakest of the four of the new Ultimate titles, purely because it's all set up. I'm not like dismissing the comic out of hand right now because it's got a strong creative team and it does evidently have a vision for where it wants to go. But this is all rather heavy exposition narrated by Kitty Pryde throughout. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing more, especially about Kitty, Bobby, and Johnny, because I've actually followed their story in the pages of Ultimate Spider-Man. That's about all I can say. It is very heavy on the setup, you know. It's like you compare with Ultimate Hawkeye issue 2, which, I mean, the schedule's already gone bananas. 4 books, 4 weeks in a month. You would have thought the plan was to give us one a month, but one a week. But this week we've got Ultimate Comics X-Men and Ultimate Comics Hawkeye, and next week's the next issue of Ultimate Spider-Man and the Ultimates. Hawkeye came out this week, and it's good, but it is very much a story in search of a character, because aside from one really neat flashback to Hawkeye, to how Hawkeye joined the Ultimates, talking about like the scientific way his powers work and the structure of his eyes, Ray Hickman, you could plug any character into the plot otherwise and it would proceed as normal. So this at least has more of an identity than Hawkeye, but right now, Just as first issues go, I would have to label it the weakest of the four, but bad Nick Spencer comics are still better than a lot of the stuff that came out this week, which we've been talking about on this
show. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard to give it as just a good, strong, full recommendation, given how much you really do need to know about and have read previously, but it looks like it'll go places. I have enough faith in the writer for it to become a very solid book. So,
cool.
I think that's the most I can say about it right now.
Like we were talking about, the first 6 pages were awesome.
That was a
very emotional.
I totally forgot about that comic because when I heard Nick Spencer was doing it, I was interested in it. Didn't pick it up though. I completely forgot about it.
Well, it's easy to miss on the shelf with this poly bag.
Yeah, I did see it.
A large.
That looks like a book I would
axe.
Not buy. Actually,
yeah. I did see it. But I was like, nah, not my thing. Awesome. Good deal. Awesome. Well, hey. That's pretty much the show then. So cool. Very cool. Interesting show. Good discussion. Hope that continues. Like I said, it's something to just think about, look at, pay attention to as far as, how men and women are portrayed in comics. Just an interesting thought. So next week, I was just looking at the DC
or you
list.
Know.
Do what?
The more you know.
Yeah. The more you know.
Classic.
So, I'm very excited next week. Do we know why I'm excited next week?
Superman? I know. You and Superman.
Oh, yeah, that's it. It's Superman, for sure.
Is it Aquaman?
No. No, it's not Aquaman.
Is it your birthday?
No, it's not my birthday.
I'm kind of drawing a blank.
Firestorm!
Here.
Firestorm! Yeah. Gail Simone, Firestorm! Fury the Firestorm! Very excited about that. I'm probably the only person, but.
No, I'm getting it. I'm picking it up. And I had 14 comics and 2 graphic novels this week, and I got 14 comics and 1 graphic novel next week. Some shit's gotta go. Although, mind you, one of the comics next week is the next Disney Marvel Muppets collection.
Ah, very nice. Yeah, we got All-Star Western, Aquaman, Batman the Dark Knight, Blackhawks, Flash, Fury the Firestorm, Green Lantern, which will be another one I'm getting, New Guardians, iVampire, Justice League Dark, Savage Hawkman, Superman, Teen Titans, and Voodoo. I know we're all holding out for that one.
Voodoo.
So.
Yeah, I'm down for Firestorm and Aquaman next week.
Awesome. So.
Good. I don't know what I'll have. I'm
foolish. Should be good stuff.
I'll get Superman. So,
did you see the preview for Superman, Triplett?
No, I didn't. Is it bad?
It looks gorgeous, but everybody is talking like the comic was written in 1974.
Ooh. good thing, though.
No, but not in a good way.
Oh, damn.
Like, really not.
Is Superman taking his shirt off with a young boy in front of him with the... No.
Me and Gilby had a conversation.
Like the cover? like the cover with the kid crying?
We had a conversation this weekend about Superman, about George Perez is writing it, but he's not doing the art, but he's doing the covers, I think.
He's doing the layouts. He's doing the layouts for the cover. I believe is it Jesus Marino is doing the pencils over the top of his layouts?
Yeah,
you can tell. I mean, looking at the preview, you can tell the Perez layouts.
Yeah, I don't know if I've read anything that he's done the art for, but we were talking because I was saying that Justice League, if George Perez was doing the art for Justice League, I think that book would be like the best book out there.
Oh my God, there would have been so much more would have happened than it as well.
Jeff Johns, George Perez, Justice League. Oh my God, that would be like the best book in like 50 years. Just
wow.
It might. Would it come out on time continually, you think, as well? Or?
George Perez is good at that. Jim Lee's the one.
George Perez delivered a full like years of Avengers.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, because I think we're all waiting for Justice League to get delayed. I mean, that's kind of that's sort of the thing that's the 800 pound gorilla in the room is.
They've already. I mean, remember this. Remember just to remind you guys that Justice League number 2 is actually not out until this week next month. Justice League is going to be a third week of the month book because if you notice, only 12 DC issues actually came out this week. So that immediately, unintentionally, but rather clumsily, given that it was their lead book, puts a 7-week gap between issues 1 and 2.
Wow.
Oh wow.
There's going to be a lot to happen between now and then too. So
yeah.
Interesting. But it happens in the past, so we don't care. So anyway, all right, well, let's do this. We'll get out of here. Thanks, team. Good show, I think. Good discussion. I appreciate Chris didn't want to really get in too much of the discussion because he'd spent so much time talking about it on Twitter, so I really appreciate you.
I think it worked out better because I think I got my rage out on Twitter. It also helped that I was surrounded by people of a communal mindset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of descending views on that, which is good. We don't try to be a hive mind, but it happens. So anyway,
I read the comics last Monday, one day, like less than 24 hours after doing the show, practically less than nearly 12 hours after doing the show. I couldn't keep it in. I couldn't keep it in for 6 days.
No, wasn't going to happen. So, but anyway, again, we are doing the show earlier when we do it live. We are starting the show at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 9 p.m. GMT, so you can check us out a little bit earlier, 30 minutes.
We're kind of kicking our new time.
And the new time is working out really well. We're maybe just a little bit over, but that's good, because first time it's all four of us.
Even with a big full-on like half-hour debate at the start, we're kicking this thing back.
Good stuff. So
check us out. Look at us go.
We can do this. So,
a little
awesome.
Bit of discipline. Just rock it.
I know. No more. No more paint. No more.
When I review a comic that no one else has read.
Well, and also it's not going page by page. When we don't go page by page, we help ourselves.
I still say people need to go pick up Turtles. It's better than any 52 I've read.
Awesome. Well, that's a big statement.
That's big praise.
There's been some good stuff.
That is. I tell you.
Awesome. Go to the website fanboyversus.com. Check out the show and stuff. Video. We do that. So anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.